You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
This is MLB.com Extras, American League Central Edition. I'm Anthony Kastrovan. Thanks for tuning in once again. The hot stove season is upon us. The Central has the defending world champions in the Kansas City Royals, and we'll see how both the Royals and the clubs following them up in the Central handle the offseason ahead. Really a fascinating division because a lot of different directions all these teams can go. You know, do the White Sox rebuild or reload after a disappointing season? Do the Indians use any members of that strong starting staff to augment their offense? The Tigers, we don't exactly know what to expect from them after a midseason teardown. We know they're going to go for it, but at what level? Are they going to play deep in the deep pool of free agency or what? And the Twins obviously made tremendous strides last season and have already been one of the bigger movers and shakers of the winter. And here we are in mid-November. They've already made a couple impact moves. So we'll see what happens. We're going to talk to all the beat reporters about what the future holds. Thanks for tuning in. Away we go. We got Jeffrey Flanagan on the line. I'm Anthony Kastrovan. Jeffrey, last time I saw you, we were in a cab in New York City coming back. From game five, you were getting ready to go cover a parade. I guess, first of all, before we talk about any off-season shenanigans, tell me about those shenanigans. That was an incredible display, that parade.
Yeah, I never really seen anything like it. I live probably about 7 or 8 miles from Union Station where the main rally was, and I remember that morning, a couple hours before it was supposed to start, I had this great idea. I was going to drive down and park kind of close to it. And I got about maybe, 100 yards outside of my house, and it was already wall-to-wall traffic. Cars weren't moving. So I just went back to my house, parked the car, and walked about 8 miles carrying my stuff all the way down to the Union Station. And it turns out, they were expecting maybe 200 to 250,000, and the estimates were anywhere as high as 800,000. So, it was just incredible turnout. People were abandoning their cars on the highway and then walking, 5-10 miles to get to it. It was just incredible. That big mass of blue just on the hills, up on top of treetops, on top of hotels. It was quite remarkable.
Well, what you didn't mention there when you said the parade, the traffic started 100 yards from your house, you live in Topeka. So that's how big that is. coming down from that high, but riding that wave now into this offseason, obviously the Royals have some big decisions to make, but, there's something to be said for being the defending champs, and I'm sure they're going to go into the season very much looking to defend that crown. There's also the, not that you rest on your laurels, but they obviously have a good thing in place and a good system in place, but, losing Johnny Cueto, potentially losing Alex Gordon and Ben Zobrist, these are some pretty sizable holes. We've known from the day they acquired Cueto that they were not going to be able to retain him.
Right.
That was never in the offing. But when you look at Zobrist and Gordon, in your mind, if they are going to keep one of those two, who do you think is more likely?
Well, it's really, really a tough call because Ben's a little bit older. I think he's 3 or 4 years older. Alex, of course, is the face of the franchise. They're not really big on giving out big contracts to players who are in their 30s. There's also budget restraints, of course. Even though they had a spike in attendance and they had a nice run through the playoffs, obviously with a bunch of home games, I don't know if there's going to be enough revenue maybe to even sign either one. They have a lot of guys. They have three big arbitration cases that's going to suck up some money. They did, jettison Alex Rios and Jeremy Guthrie. That's going to, take some money off the books. But you're talking, it depends on what the market value is for those guys. I've seen numbers 4 for $60 for Zobrist, 4 or 5 for $80 or $90 for Alex Gordon. And those are the numbers that a small market team just aren't really comfortable with, especially with a couple guys in their 30s. Now, Ben Zobrist would fit in nicely because he's a super utility guy, but they've already got Omar Infante coming back at second. He's not nearly the hitter that Ben Zobrist is, but he's already paid for, so to speak. So he's got an $8 million deal this year and next year. Zobrist could maybe be a fit in left field. He's not good defensively. Obviously, he's a gold glover like Alex Gordon. But, just really tough decisions going forward. But the main thing that you mentioned, too, I mean, they have the nucleus coming back. And this game, as you also know, is a game about managing change. I mean, every roster every year is going to be different. And it's just going to come up to be their job to figure out how much they can spend and who they can keep and maybe who they can add.
Joined by Rhett Bollinger. And Rhett, you've been busy already here in November. The Twins have been busy. Been one of those teams that really jumped to the forefront of the hot stove season right away. First of all, go through a couple of moves here, but we'll start with Byung-Ho Park, who is obviously an intriguing, especially on the heels of what Young-Ho Kang, who finished third in the NL Rookie of the Year voting, on the heels of what he did in Pittsburgh this past summer. There's a lot of interest in Park. Different players. Park, obviously, more first base and maybe left field, but that's debatable. But the pure power is really something intriguing, especially by the standards of the day. What were your thoughts on the Twins getting the winning bid and as they go forward here these next couple of weeks trying to work out a contract with him?
I mean, it definitely surprised me. I mean, the Twins already had, options at first base and DH. Joe Mauer's a regular first baseman. Miguel Sano saw a lot of time at DH last year. Trevor Plouffe still on the roster at third base. They're kind of crowded there in the, the corner infield spot. So kind of a surprise to go after Park. But the Twins needed power. They really wanted a right-handed power bat. They got a chance here to get one, maybe even a discounted price in a sense that, it's kind of an unproven slugger in a sense. Obviously, they had to pay the posting fee. They had to still sign him to a contract, first of all. But it's not going to be some crazy, free agent, number one type guy, kind of deal here. So the Twins possibly could get some sort of discount, some sort of deal here if he produces. But there's obviously risk, You never know what you're going to get. But it is a good time, like you said, to see Kang do so well in Pittsburgh. Similar numbers. I mean, Park actually has had better numbers offensively because obviously Gong's a middle infielder, while Park's a first baseman. But this is a guy that has legit power, hitting over 50 home runs in back-to-back years. I mean, the Korean baseball organization does, kind of skew toward offense a little bit, but that kind of power is still legit to have that many home runs. Kind of a surprise the Twins did that, but Twins are trying to make it work here, but maybe moving Miguel Sano to the outfield. A big possible impact that for the Twins here.
Yeah, you mentioned Sano to the outfield, and that seems the obvious solution here. And then the next move, the Aaron Hicks trade, just made that more obvious, although obviously, there's still a good bit of speculation out there about Trevor Plouffe potentially being moved to open up third base for Sano. Do you think there's any merit to that at this point, or does the outfield just make too much sense?
I think there's at least a chance of that happening right now. The Twins do believe that Miguel Sano can handle third base. So if that's the case, they'd like to probably have him there long-term, kind of going forward. But as of right now, they still have Plouffe under contract here for a couple more seasons. He's been a solid contributor for this team. He's one of the team leaders. So I think, he's a pretty good offensive player too, Plouffe is. I think the Twins would like to have some offense this year. And I think having Plouffe and Sano and Mauer and all those guys kind of all in the same lineup in Park would be their best offensive lineup. But it's also tough because last year, it seems like they kind of made some strides defensively, especially in the outfield, using kind of that young, fast outfield a couple times late in the season with, Eddie Rosario and Hicks and Buxton. So you thought maybe this year the Twins wanted to go all in on defense, but it turns out they kind of look like they're kind of going toward offense a little bit with Sano in the outfield. So it's still not for sure that Sano can even handle the outfield yet. I mean, right now, I think he's taken some fly balls in the Dominican Winter League. I think he's going to try to play a little bit of outfield in spring training because it's his first time ever playing out there. So it's not like a done deal. Twins are more than anything, they're kind of just trying it out. But if Sano proves he can handle the outfield, obviously he's a big guy at 6'4", 260 pounds. But if he proves that he can handle it a little bit, it would be a big thing for the offense, like I said, because he can get his bat in there with everybody else's. But still a chance the Twins could move Plouffe. I thought maybe before, heading into the offseason, maybe Plouffe could move for catching help. But obviously that already happened with Aaron Hicks with catching help. So if Plouffe were to be moved, it would probably be now for pitching help.
First time in a while, and we've got Jim Rosenhaus of the Indians broadcast team joining us. And Rosie, it's going to be a fascinating winter as far as the tribe is concerned because I think a lot of people still like this team, despite the disappointment of 2015, especially the way they finished strong. They got over that 500 hump at the end of the year. They've got a stout starting staff, and obviously need some help on the offensive end. But I think what we saw from the Mets with their run of the World Series, you have that, you know, controllable upside starting pitching, you're off to a good start.
And I think that's the key when you mention the Mets. What is going to be that igniter to the offense? Because it's been back-to-back seasons now where the Indians have had the good pitching but have struggled to be more consistent offensively, and it's hurt them in the end. There's some good things to like because you know, they've had a stretch where they've had winning seasons the past 3 years, so there's some they're close, I guess is the best way to put it, but what's going to ignite that offense to allow them to really get rolling? And as we saw with the Mets, it didn't take much, but just that one piece can not only be an impact in and of itself, but what it does to the rest of the lineup. And I'm not exactly sure what the answer is. Is that out there through affordable free agency? Do they have to make a deal, and how do they make a deal without taking away too much from what is a great strength, and that's their young starting pitching?
It's going to be I'm sure they're going to have hard decisions ahead because people are interested in Danny Salazar. People are interested in Carlos Carrasco. You know, those guys, especially with Carrasco's contract, I mean, it's just a ton of value there. But you're right. I mean, you mentioned affordable free agency. We know this team's not going to break the bank and go crazy in free agency. And, you know, sometimes that can turn out to be a good thing because that can bite you to get in the top of the market. But, you know, the Mets, just to keep this comparison going, I mean, the Mets a year ago had a very quiet winter. They signed Michael Kadire very early, and they didn't do anything to address what seemed to be a pretty gaping hole at shortstop, and Mets fans were all up in arms. But there was context there because of the way their division played out. They had this golden opportunity midseason, and they seized it way too soon to know what the complexion of the 2016 AL Central is going to be. There's kind of X factors and question marks with every club. And, of course, the defending world champs happen to be in that division, so that doesn't help. But in your mind, Rosie, you know, you're in the GM seat for a minute here these next few months. What is your take on the best way to proceed? I mean, they have to make some acquisitions. We know that as of now, their outfield is pretty flimsy just as a function of the Michael Brantley injury. What do you think is realistic here?
Well, you've been making the comparisons with the Mets, and I think another one that maybe you can make, and maybe it's a bit of a stretch, but when you talk about affordable bats, look at what the Royals did in terms of what I think was a fairly affordable signing of Kendrys Morales. They were able to identify someone that wasn't going to break the bank for them. And that, my goodness, it turns out that he's a major impact bat in their lineup this season and you know, a real game changer for them. So I think you'll see the Indians scour the market for someone like that. I don't know that there is someone like that out there, but maybe, you know, or it's not going to be someone who's looking for 5 years at $25 million a year, but maybe something a little bit more reasonable. And you mentioned being in the GM seat. I would not want to, I would really struggle being more conservative trying to move a starting pitcher and making sure that you get back what you need to get back for one of those starters because, gosh, how often have you seen it where a team does that and then we're sitting here this time next year saying, boy, the Indians have to get some starting pitching.
that's given up
some strain.
It wouldn't even surprise me. As we sit here today, they've probably got six or seven legitimate starting pitching candidates for that rotation, and yet it still wouldn't surprise me if they went out and signed and not somebody who's going to be at the front of the rotation by any means, but, you know, last year they signed Gavin Floyd, and we know that didn't work out. But, you know, somebody of that ilk where just to ensure you have depth on top of depth because that's the way this game is. There's just such a high attrition rate with starting pitching.
And that's very true. And, you know, they haven't had a major pitching injury for a while now. And by that I mean Kluber missed a little bit of time. So did Carrasco last year. Salazar obviously had the major issue early in his career, but they've been, I think you can say, reasonably fortunate. But, you know, I think with Cody Anderson, if you count him in that mix of six to seven starters, you know, here's a young guy who was a rookie last year. So you got to be a little bit careful there in terms of expectations. And so, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to go see him get a veteran starter.
And we've got news already in this hot stove season from the Tigers. We knew they needed bullpen help, and they went out and found it. Francisco Rodriguez from the Brewers. And, Beck, break down this deal for us in terms of what exactly the Tigers giving up. Obviously, they didn't have to. This is a team that just spent a good portion of the summer trying to restock its farm system, and it seems like they were able to make this trade without getting too deep into that.
Yeah, it was a culmination of a lot of explorations on the closer market, both free agents and trades. I thought that everything was set up towards a Joaquin Soto reunion, but I think with enough teams looking for not only closer help but setup help on the market, the price on Soria was going up to where there was a good chance it was going to take a three-year deal to get him in. And then on the trade market, you had big names like Kimbrel and Aroldis Chapman, who's still out there, of course, and some other guys. I think Brad Boxberger came up. But the price tags on those guys, especially for a team that's trying to rebuild its farm system, was going to be high. You were almost certain to have to take away from the major league ready portion of your farm system to be able to pull off something like that. And the Tigers weren't going to be comfortable doing that for 1 year of Chapman. And even for a few years of Boxberger, it was going to be a little bit tricky. I know there were some mixed reviews of Boxberger as well with his year on the closer role. This was kind of a happy medium for them, I think. They didn't have to give up a lot, obviously. Betancourt was number 10 or 11 prospect, I think, on the Tigers' list at the end of the year. And it's not a heavy financial commit, because if you remember, K-Rod was one of those guys who lingered out there on the market well in the spring training a couple of years ago. And he ended up signing for 2 years and an option. So really, for a couple years, assuming they pick up the option, they're only on the hook for somewhere around $11 million. And even if they don't pick up the option, I think it's only $9.5 million. So from a financial standpoint and from a prospect standpoint, it was a pretty good mix for a guy who the last couple of years shows that he could still be an elite closer.
He really has shown that, and it's an amazing career. It's hard to believe he's only, 33, I think he'll be 34 next season. He's been around forever, it feels like. He's been around since 2002 and that run the Angels made that year. And just this past season, 2015 with the Brewers, this was the best walks and hits per innings pitched mark of his career. I saw that our friend and colleague Adam McAlvey had tweeted out a quote from Craig Counsell earlier this year, where he's just saying that the guy's continually reinvented himself. And it just seems like for this Tigers bullpen, obviously any stability is a good thing, but to have it from a guy who's both a stable statistical presence and also a bit of a bullpen leader seems pretty important for this group.
Yeah, and I know it's going to undergo some scrutiny because the Tigers have taken some shots on older relievers in the past. Joe Nathan was just a year and a half ago, I guess, and gotten burned on it. On the flip side, I think you can make an argument for K-Rod that while the stuff is aging, he doesn't have that fastball that he once did. His numbers from a statistical standpoint and from the metrics are as good as they've been really since those first couple of years he was a closer. He's got a changeup that a lot of guys rave about. He's throwing strikes, which became a big problem for Nathan as his time in Detroit went on. He seems to keep the ball down. He locates well. Now, he did have a little bit of a problem with home runs. It remains to be seen how much the change of ballparks will have an impact on that, going from Miller Park to a little bit more spacious confines in Detroit. But all in all, for getting a guy who's been in the league as long as K-Rod has, it feels like you're still getting productive years out of him, and you're not on the hook long term.
I am joined by Scott Merkin, and we are going to talk about, for my money, kind of short list of more interesting teams this offseason, just because we don't know what direction they're going to go in. I'm not sure they know what direction they're going to go in. The White Sox obviously went heavy in the acquisition front last winter. Did not work out nearly as well as planned. They do still have a core of Chris Sale and Jose Abreu and Adam Eaton and Jose Quintana. Question being, do they add on to that core? Do they use a Quintana to add some other pieces? A lot of different directions they could go, Merck. First of all, I guess let's just take it from a general sense. Your sense of this club going into the winter and what direction you think they might end up going.
Well, it's interesting. We were at a group of us were at the Amateur City Elite, their great youth baseball program, which has now helped send 106 kids through collegiate scholarships on to the next level. And Kenny spoke a little bit at that. Kenny Williams, the executive vice president, former general manager, spoke a little about the direction. And he said, I think it sounds, you say it out loud, worse than it is, but he said, you know, they still don't know the direction. Now, that's not like they're sitting there saying, flipping coins and writing down, well, we have 26 heads, 23 tails, so we go this direction. I think Rick Hahn, the general manager, is really exploring all the different options, checking out free agency, checking out what's available in trade, checking out what they have to give up to get something in trade, how much they have to spend on the free agency. We asked straight on, you know, after last year's disappointing season and the $85 million they have committed to nine players right now, are they not going to add payroll? Is that pretty much safe to assume? He said, no, you can't assume that. Nothing's certain yet. So I still think it's going to be what you've pretty much seen from them in the past, you know, with a few years veering off, and that's kind of a blend, you know, where maybe they add something important at third base, but maybe subtract somewhere else to kind of balance it out a little bit. I would be surprised, this is me guessing, if they go over, the payroll was somewhere around $118 million last year. I would be surprised if they raise that, but I would certainly not be surprised if they get to that point or somewhere maybe a little bit above that point. So again, I don't think it's going to be, I wrote this in the free agent preview for us. I don't think it's going to be, you know, a lot of big ticket items, so to speak, they're going after. But I do think they're going to look to improve and not tear down and go to a full-fledged rebuild. There's too many, I think you probably see this too, I mean, there's too many veterans that they're committed to for more than just a season that they have a lot of work in the opposite direction to do if they're going to go full rebuild. And to be honest with you, people will laugh and say, oh, you know, you're looking at rose-colored glasses or whatever, but I don't think they're that far off because of the fact that I think just having this whole group together when they added so many new guys last year, having them together for 1 year is going to just inherently improve them going into 16.
Well, one move they did make already was declining the $9 million option on Alexei Ramirez. And maybe there's still room to work something out with Alexei going forward on a lower budget. But when you look at their needs, Merck, certainly – you know, shortstops on that list, second base, third base, you mentioned, catcher. They could certainly stand to upgrade offensively a catcher. Is there a guy or guys in this free agent field that you look at those positions and feel is realistic for this club, knowing the financial ramifications in play?
Well, I don't actually, because I don't think the catching pool is extraordinarily deep, and they really like
right.
With Tyler Flowers, and this, you know, again, aggravates fans, but it's accurate that they like what he does behind the plate. They like what he does handling the pitchers, and that's the number one goal. But now, he readily admitted to me at the beginning of this offseason when I talked to him that he was part of the issue. Tyler is part of the issue offensively, but he felt like, you know, he adds some points to his average is what he does in terms of pitch framing, which he's, I think, according to, you know, whatever stat you look at, one of the top two or three in the game in pitch framing. And just handling the staff, which is, you know, by far the strong suit on the White Sox. You look at third base, and there's a guy like David Freese out there, who's a very solid third baseman, but I don't know if that's the direction they want to go and commit, you know, whatever, for two or three years to get him. A guy like Todd Frazier, who, you know, and again, no one said anything specifically except we've heard rumblings that the Reds may be kind of open for business. That might be someone that could intersect, but then again, you weigh about what do you have to give up to get him, and is that one of those things where you add somewhere but subtract another spot where you have some depth? And in terms of short stuff, it's an interesting situation because, you know, yeah, they didn't turn down Ramirez's $10 million option and used the $1 million buyout on him, and you know, he wants to come back. I mean, it's been, you know, made pretty much clear by him, and even during the offseason, it's the only team he's known since he came to, you know, Major League Baseball. But I think he's going to be, you know, interested to see the offers he gets in a market that's not deep either at shortstop. I think he could be a pretty good option for reasonable type prices, you know, a couple-year deal for him. So that, you know, his desire to come back may be outweighed by what he's offered. And then you have a guy like Tim Anderson, who's, you know, according to our rankings, is the number one prospect for the White Sox and one of the few guys right now in the Sox who's in the top 100, period, in baseball, or at least was in the last time they had these rankings. You know, how far away is he at shortstop? So do you want to go out and look at an Ian Desmond who's going to probably, you know, who's not going to come for 1 year? That's pretty much assumed. Or do you want to go with Tyler Seldon, you know, very good defensive player and, you know, decent offensively, more maybe, you know, profiles more as a utility guy, but go with him until Tim Anderson might be ready in 2017. And then you go to the other side is, do you know for a fact that Tim Anderson defensively is going to be your shortstop? So there's all the situations. I would say third base and then upgrading offensively, whether it's catcher or whether it's, you know, even an outfield position or anything like that, and then adding another pitcher because you want to, you know, keep making that strong suit even stronger are the priorities for the White Sox.